In this week's Nutrition and Life episode, I speak with Tony Buttagi, who is regarded as one of Australia's premier personal trainers with a PhD in exercise and sports science. Tony and I speak about general training principles, the mistakes he sees personal trainers and trainees make, his certification training to train, and more. Get ready for a jam-packed episode. I'm excited for you to listen to it. And if you enjoy the show, please help us spread the message, take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media, or leave us a rating and review. Thank you so much. Now on to my conversation with Tony.
Hello and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and today I have the absolute pleasure of speaking with one of Australia's premier personal trainers, creator of the online personal training program, Training to Train, and exercise physiologist, Dr. Tony Buttagi. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
I'm super excited to speak to you about all things personal training, training in general, health today. But before we get into some details, I would love for our listeners just to have a little bit of a background story of who you are and what brought you to where you are today.
Sure thing. Thank you for having me. I am primarily a personal trainer and strength coach and have been so for close to 30 years. And I started in the industry by not really knowing what to do. So I thought I'd become a personal trainer because I liked fitness and health and sports. And I studied sports science, human movement at university. And it took about a year to get into it. But after a year, I fell in love with nutrition, physiology, anatomy. And my grades in year one, they were dreadful. But from that point on, I applied myself a little bit more. And I wanted to know more, so I went back to uni after uni and did postgrad work. But I've never really been a scientist. I have been someone who likes science, but I really do like working with the public. So I have remained a trainer and an educator.
Oh, that's amazing. And I can imagine that out of your own passion for training, probably came the desire to create this amazing program now that you run online, by the looks of it, for other personal trainers. Where did that desire really come from to build a course like that?
It was in the early days, in the early 2000s, I finished university and I realized that there just weren't many good books train other trainers on what we actually did all day, every day, from the assessment to long-term programming and exercise technique. And I was traveling around the world to study with renowned strength coaches, but there weren't any books. And I thought, well, I should teach what I'm doing with my clients to other trainers coming through. And at the time, I was teaching what we have in Australia called certificates. So to become a trainer, you need a certificate 3 and 4 and a diploma. I was teaching on those courses for a provider, and I thought, this is really basic. And honestly, this is not what we do in the gym all day, every day. So I came up with courses that were face-to-face. And then when COVID happened, I had two close friends, clients say, you know, you've really got to go online. And COVID was the thing that took me from being a face-to-face educator to being an online. And it really is just about what do trainers need to know, from the assessment to the programming, the right exercises at the right time. And that's eventually what the courses became.
Very interesting. And I'm glad that it brought you online as well, because I'm sure it's kind of allowed other people worldwide to do your course. What are some of the mistakes you might see personal trainers make these days? Or if someone listening, if they have worked with a personal trainer and they're like, I didn't actually enjoy that much, maybe he was doing something wrong, or maybe someone listening is a personal trainer and they might wonder, what am I doing wrong? So what are some of the things that you see that personal trainers in general might be doing wrong?
There's a number of things. And I say this knowing that I have made my fair amount of mistakes over the years. And you will make mistakes as long as we realize that this is a mistake. We may need to listen to our clients more rather than having such a preconceived way that everyone should do this exercise and do this type of program. Realize that everyone is different. And we always say everyone is unique and should be treated as such. But in practice, that rarely happens. Everyone does the same squat, the same way, the same deadlift, but no two bodies are the same. And when I think about many of the mistakes that I've made, I've tried to fit people into that same mold rather than working with that client's body, their range of motion, their limitations. There's lots of things that I think we could do better as an industry. One of them is we need to have more plans for our client, a long-term plan. And it takes a long time to build experience as a coach, as it does in any field. That's why if you have a plumber or a builder or a doctor or a lawyer, the more they've been in the game, the more experience that they have and can do a better job. And it's the same as a personal trainer. It takes years to develop that as you watch with your eyes and you take on feedback and you use testing data and you see what works and what doesn't work. You can't read this stuff in a book. But having a plan, at least this is where you are now, this is where you want to go, and I'm going to develop you a program that builds upon the capacities we did in the last program so we can leapfrog it to where you are. Rather than just having, well, you want more muscle mass, so I'm going to give you 4 sets of 10 of the hip thrust and we're going to hip thrust all year round. This is, to me, a fast track to monotony. And what good coaches do is they try and remove monotony and insert variation. Variation in the exercise choice, variation in the training variables, the sets and the reps and the method, but do so in a logical and sequential manner. So I see that's probably the other big area, is having a good plan. And then finally, in this era, gone are the days of trainers sitting down and reading a book. We are bombarded with social media and YouTube of short snippets of information. Whereas the real learning either comes with interning or studying with a seasoned veteran coach or reading a really good book written by an expert. But I think often our attention, a lot of things are vying for our attention. We just don't have that attention span to sit down and read a book. And I would say to many of my students, when was the last time you read a book about training from beginning to end? Mm-hmm. And the answer is no, we get most of our information in 90-second snippets on social media. And that is not the best way to service our clients.
So many great points that several I want to touch on. Firstly, I love the point of long-term vision. Unfortunately, I think often it's also the clients that come to us with, you know, they might buy a package, 3 sessions or whatever, or maybe even a month, whatnot. And I believe many trainers, especially if they start out new, they feel the urge to, I need to make that person sweat as much as possible within the hour. And you and I both know that sweat or even soreness is not necessarily a good indicator for a good workout or for an effective workout, rather. So finding that line between, I'm going to challenge that person enough, but also educate them on the importance of rest between sets of, you know, maybe going for weight rather than just a high repetition range and getting a good sweat on or whatever. But also the balance between variety that you touched on, and at the same time, having some constants that you can progressively overload on, so that it's not just random from one session to another, and explaining to the client along the way of why you're progressively overloading, or also why you have certain patterns like squat patterns or hinge patterns or whatever in every session, perhaps. So I really like that you mentioned too, though, that it is a pairing of logic, of catering to the individual, because not everything that you might have in mind might work on that day. Maybe they slept really poorly, or maybe they've tweaked something or whatnot. And at the same time, still, applying what you learned. So I'm curious to hear what would be some of your favorite book recommendations for anybody out there where you're like, oh, those 2-3, this is like the Bible of personal training.
I am asked this question a lot because I enjoy reading and learning from all the people who are the colleagues or have gone before me. It's always context driven. So I entered the industry from, you can tell by my physique, from endurance sports. I came in from triathlon. So I was really interested in endurance, oxygen transport, and trying to improve VO2 max and performance. And there are giants in the field of oxygen transport. And then when I fell in love with strength training, I realized, wow, there is a whole world of strength scientists, muscle scientists. And these two people, they never speak because they're in completely, they're doing very different things. And in the world of strength training, there are giants, and everything that they write, you must read. And people like Mike Stone and William Cramer, these are big names that they write mainly on strength and muscle and hormones. And it gives us, it doesn't tell us what to do in the weights room, but it gives us this framework for understanding how does the body move. So Stone and Cramer and Greg Half, I think, are three of the big names that everyone, everything they write, you have to read. And I learn a lot of what I do in the muscle world from either applying what coaches have done with endurance athletes in terms of organizing interval training, work and rest. I take those ideas for set and rest patterns, but I also take the techniques developed by the Stones and the Kramers and the Halves on strength training, the eccentric loading, cluster sets, and rest pause methods. And that's clearly designed to enhance strength. And most of my clients are interested in muscle, which means that I'm taking those ideas, the spirit of why they're doing what they're doing to get more out of the set, and then I modify it and apply it to muscle. And I think people like Brad Schoenfeld, best out of anyone, Stu Phillips have done a fabulous job of just dealing with muscle hypertrophy. And those names, Stone, Cramer, Half, have done a fabulous job in the strength. So when I say these names, everything they publish, I make sure I read.
Very interesting, super cool. Thank you so much for these recommendations. And yeah, I have to admit, I have not read Stone and Cramer. I'm familiar with some of Brad Schoenfeld's work, very much like that. And one of my favorites is the Strength and Nutrition Pyramid by, I believe, Dr. Eric Helms, or he was one of the co-authors anyway. I believe you've done some work at AUT or perhaps even with Dr. Eric Helms. I'm not
I
entirely sure.
actually met him. I got the tour around there. I was at the time working in New Zealand to teach courses to personal trainers, but I was also on the weightlifting certification course. So I, as part of that, I got a tour, and I think Eric was doing his PhD at the time. So he won't remember me, but I certainly remember him. He's a giant. I think this new evidence-based world, which is really quite new in the 10 years, because before that, most of the voice in the industry was very guru driven. Now, some of that was outstanding, but some of it was really quite didn't hold up to scrutiny and scientific investigation. So the Brett Contreras, the Brad Schoenfeld, the Eric Helms, the Alan Aragons, I could go on, but these guys have done an exceptional job of bringing our industry up to the next level.
Yeah, I can only agree. I actually did part of my bachelor's degree several years back at AUT in Auckland, but unfortunately, I never had the chance to meet him in person either. But nonetheless, a brilliant university with, I believe, a great sports and exercise science program.
Yeah, first rate. Yeah, first rate.
Absolutely. But yeah, I'm interested in regards to your course also. Maybe you can give us a bit of a lineup of the particular topics that you take people through. How long is the course, and what is the certification, I guess, at the end?
It all came about from this idea of where is a client at? What are they good at? And what are they not good at? And then I realized that a lot of the assessments that I was doing with my clientele over the years, it was always tailor-made. And other trainers would say, well, why did you use that assessment with this person, but something different there? And I essentially realized that out of every client who comes into the gym door, they will broadly fall under three categories. I'll either have never been in the gym. They might have been training, but really still don't know. I did a Zoom with somebody today who's been training a while, but still didn't know where the adductors were or the obliques. So just they can train, but they don't know yet. And then there's well trained. This means that their programming goals, their exercise selections, the methods that we use will be entirely different because they are at so different levels on their genetic ability. I then thought, well, if your program is going to be geared towards, say, understanding how to move better, then the assessment should reflect that because I realized I made a lot of mistakes by giving beginners really advanced assessments. And obviously, they're going to fail them because they don't have the movement literacy. So I roughly imaginatively call these beginners, intermediate, and advanced. The beginners have their own movement-oriented assessments. Can you hip hinge? Can you preserve neutral spine? And therefore, those assessments were all about getting you to move better, because that's what the next 6 months will be. And intermediate will be more like, well, where do the wheels come off? What are your weaknesses? Left to right, perhaps front to back. And the assessments now start to interrogate left to right difference, because that's where we see shifts when you're squatting or deadlifting, or the bar pivoting and rotating around when bench pressing. So the assessments for an intermediate now are next level, but really focus left to right difference and stabilize a difference. And therefore, the next 6 months of programming should be geared towards fixing what you find in the assessment. In other words, don't do an assessment if you're not going to do anything about it. And then finally, the advanced, well, their methods are much different, and their preparation is much different. We don't go back to rotator cuff and short foot muscles. We now try and incorporate the shoulder stabilizers with the humerus, with your grip. So the assessments then are often looking at, well, you already know how to squat. So what is your squat versus your front squat or your single leg squat or your deadlift versus your single leg deadlifts? So we start to really look at bang for your buck everyday movements and then compare them to other lifts where we know there's a relationship, or between the stabilizers. And then the next 6 months uses advanced periodization and advanced methods like offset loading or chaotic loading to use the stabilizers with the prime movers. And it's all about how do you prepare a client to train better, hence the title of the course, Training to Train. So that's an overview of the three different ability levels, three different assessments, and therefore three very different types of programming.
I love it. And so is it 1 year in total, or how long is the course?
No, it's only 8 modules. So all of the courses that I run, which I have 4, they always start a bit less, and I always tend to add a little bit more as I realize there's either new research or better ways of doing things. But they're typically around 6 to 12 weeks long.
Okay, amazing. Very cool. But yeah, I love that there's a variety of courses as well, so that people might start with one and then realize something else complementary is necessary or would serve them. And at the same time, we're not all necessarily getting the load of, if you never train with advanced athletes, why start with that in a course? So, yeah.
100%. There's a lot of great, in fact, I'm asked, what courses do I recommend? And there's a lot of great courses, but it's always context. Who do you work with?
Mm-hmm.
And since I'm almost exclusively a personal trainer, then our bread and butter is body composition, weight loss, and hypertrophy. That's it. So my courses are how to write strength and hypertrophy programs, how to do fat loss, how to do the assessments and train people. And then for lack of a better phrase, I've got a mentorship, which is just about anatomy. So how do you know your anatomy better? And how do you spot signs that your serratus anterior is not working relative to your deltoids? Or how do you solve an anterior tilt in the scapula or a collapsing knee? So that's all about, that's the muscles. This is how you solve it.
Very cool. Super interesting. Thank you for sharing a bit about that. And I want to backpedal a little bit on something that you said. So you are obviously very interested in strength and conditioning, but you said you come more from endurance background. And this is a question I didn't actually mention or write down earlier, but I'm just curious. Have you heard of Ross Edgley? Someone
I have.
Who swam around the UK. I read his book. Forget the title at the moment, but I read his book not too long ago and was super fascinated by him because he was much more muscular than like an endurance type swimmer sort of thing. And in his book, he also went a bit about his training and of course nutrition in there as well. And yeah, it was just very interesting. So do you nowadays work with athletes as well that do both type of things, like strength and conditioning, and at the same time endurance races, maybe not to that extent, swimming for 180 days straight, but still.
Yeah, he is a specimen. In fact, funny you should bring him up. I show him on video number one in my Training to Train course as the idea of you need all-round general physical preparedness, regardless of what your goal is. And when most people think, well, why would I do endurance training? And there is a really good reason to do it, from just having greater fitness, health aside, which is beyond dispute from a cardiovascular perspective, but its ability to improve mitochondrial function, acid buffering, recovery between sets, the transference to the world of the gym for muscle and strength, it's beyond dispute. But there's so much bro science in the fitness industry that you lose all your gains if you do cardio training. So I show Ross as a picture of where this guy swam. He recently broke the world continuous record swimming 510 kilometers, so something like that, in
I
one
saw
go
that,
without
yes.
stopping.
Yes.
Just exceptional. And then he posts a video of him then going and training his arm straight afterwards. So he's absolutely a specimen. To answer your question, I really try and encourage that mold with all of my clients, except if they're training very specifically for, say, a physique or a strength-oriented goal. And that is, what do you need to age really well? We know you need a very high VO2 max. So that has to be trained. That doesn't happen by accident. We know you need great metabolic health, flexibility, mobility, stability, strength, power, hypertrophy. And all of these are a loading spectrum from building metabolic endurance to building 1 RM strength. And that means that over the long term, depending on who they are, the time they've got, what they're already good at, I will use periodization models to bring up simultaneously endurance, aerobic fitness, strength, and muscle mass while always working on stability. Sometimes that's done early in the season. Sometimes I sprinkle that in the workouts, depending on the client. But that's my framework, which means that they'll get to 60, 70, 80. I've got 10 plus clients who are over 60, and I've got 5 clients who I've trained for over 25 years. And you go through the whole life with them, with injuries and kids and marriages and all these things. And that teaches you how to balance the right volume so it gets done rather than burning them out and then they drop off. So that's my worldview when it comes to a client.
I absolutely think that's such a great approach in terms of longevity and just overall well-roundedness. Do you think that that is one of the perhaps mistakes that often happen in the strength and conditioning world that we're just getting a little bit too tunnel visioned on one particular thing?
And I would not only say that you want to build muscle, then all that involves is muscle, and we'll disregard everything else. We've forgotten that we need to look at all the other different disciplines in this world. And I love reading the classic literature on training. When I read the studies from the 60s or the books written in the 60s and 70s from the former Soviet Union, they always talk about this value of general all-round endurance, strength, mobility, you name it. We do all of these so that we can do our specific tasks more successfully. That's the goal. And we get very siloed. So a lot of the people doing the muscle research, they're not dealing with the strength, and they're certainly not dealing with endurance, and vice versa. Endurance people often don't know the first thing about strength. Good coaches have to read everyone. They need to know what Andy Jones is talking about with oxygen transport, what George Brooks is talking about with lactate shuttling, what Brad Schoenfeld is talking about fiber typing, what the Belgian group are talking about fiber typing and your ability to recover. You got to read everything. And I would say I read a minimum of 1 hour a day. And I think that I don't nearly touch, I know I don't nearly touch the surface. There's so much to know to be a really great coach, but you have to read cross-discipline and then think about it and then apply it to your clients.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think we often have one or the other, that someone is like very well read, but they don't have that
Never
practical
applied it.
experience, or they're afraid. They always think, I'm not good enough yet, or blah blah blah. But I mean, not so much comes from the experience, or then the other person that's just like just in the gym the whole time doing their same thing over and over. But yeah, one other thing that I wanted to add to the mistakes in the space. So I personally come from a little bit more of a CrossFit background. And while that is, like we spoke about, so many things combined and aiming for a well-rounded approach, it did not serve me well either, because I personally didn't approach it with the right mindset, in the sense of knowing myself or keeping the stressors down where I should have. And at the same time, it was not the best programming either. So it was just too much. But what you're talking about is different. It's, a logical approach. It is still progressive overload. It is pulling back in certain areas. And it doesn't mean just going balls to the walls every single day for the, just for the sake of it, sort of thing. So, yeah, I think your well-rounded approach with touching on all the different systems and flexibility and mobility, but at the same time, strength, hypertrophy, absolutely makes sense.
If we were to take you as a test case and use a classic univariate model. So in the 1970s, Verkhoshansky said you should focus on one fitness quality at once and then logically move to the next one. So if we use that block model that's uni approached, we could say, I'm going to develop strength endurance, and we can do all of your endurance and high rep work, and we do that for 6 to 8 weeks. And then I'm going to take that capacity and we're going to build volume so you develop some muscle mass and some tendon resilience. And then for the next 6 to 8 weeks, we're going to develop maximal strength using maximal strength protocols. And then I'm going to develop power. And we're going to do Olympic weightlifting. With that model, from that point on, you can use a multi-model approach, like a conjugate, where you develop strength and power and strength and hypertrophy and some endurance within that week. And then you could be a CrossFit athlete training sensibly according to the right rep ranges that the people who invented weightlifting said, this is how it should be done. They're not doing it for 100 reps or for time or on the minute. They're doing it for 8 sets of 2 with 3 minutes. So this stuff, you can't beat the original scientists who did all the work in this area. You just follow the periodization. It will get you to where you want to get injury free.
Precisely. Yeah, I unfortunately had to stop or step back because of injuries. And now I do much more of like a bodybuilding type training, but still paired with, you know, I get my steps in and everything else. But nonetheless, it was also my mindset. And that's actually something that I thought of when we spoke about Ross Edgley. So in terms of my mindset, I was just thinking I needed to go hard no matter what, and not knowing when to pull back. But I don't know if you agree on this, but I mean, someone like Ross Edgley will have to have an extraordinary mindset to push through these things. But at the same time, I'm sure it's still strategic to an extent anyway. What's your opinion in terms of mindset of Gen Pop or athletes like him?
Yeah, it's very clear that the elite athlete is not just elite genetically and physiologically, they're elite mindsets. I have met, known, trained people who are exceptionally gifted, exceptionally, but just didn't have the capacity to turn up every day and do the work required to be Olympic standard. And then they burn out. And I've also met, in fact, next week I'm having a coffee with a multiple Olympian who, by his own admission, wouldn't be the most genetically gifted at all, but was his dad just instilled this hard work ethic, and he did 2 Olympics. And he just brought himself by pure grit. It's just this one characteristic of an elite is that they don't take no for an answer and they just keep pushing through. And I know I don't have that. I like my sleep, but people like Ross Edgley, he will train for 24 hours in a row. Now, all things being equal, there's only one Ross Edgley. He's got a team of support around him. He's always being tested, and he's got support. He's got a very supportive girlfriend who can feed him 24 hours a day. And I don't think what we see enough in the video clips, and maybe this is something that he can add in the time, is to show how much time did he need off after that. Mm-hmm. He talked about after doing the lead into Mallorca and then doing his long distance record, he had 10 days completely because he off training because he had tendinopathy and he's had shoulder surgeries and X, Y, and Z. So these kinds of feats don't come without penalty, whether you're Dave Goggins and you're just running all the time or you're a Ross Edgley and the shoulder. It's tens of thousands of contractions and shoulder rotations. This is not going to come without penalty. It doesn't matter who you are. So we luckily don't have to train to such a degree.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that that's actually often hard for people to grasp, that difference in training for longevity, training for performance, training for aesthetics. They all have some trade-offs, because someone who is at the end of a bodybuilding prep, they're not going to be very healthy, and they're probably not even performing at their best in the sense of strength, versus someone like Ross Edgley. He's probably fine losing a couple of years of his life for being able to do what he does. But if someone wants to train for longevity, it's also recognizing, okay, I need to take some rest days. More is not always better. And in fact, many of our listeners, and I will include myself in that as well, actually struggle more taking rest days than they do going to the gym sometimes. And I would be interested to hear what or how you approach that with clients like that, where they're like, oh, but I just need to move, or I just want to do something, or you need to tell them to only push to 7 or 8 RPE or whatever, a few weeks, or take a deload.
The point is for everyone, what are you after? And are you using exercise to cover a or to self-soothe a psychological issue and you just have to do it? So that we need to be aware of. But all things being equal, there's an upper limit to which the body can take training, absorb it, and turn it into positive adaptation. If you are training, let's say, zone two cardio, and you're doing it, the experts who study this, like Inigo San Milan, he would say that you're topping out most of your metabolic benefit by about 5 hours a week in zone two. So if you do 7 and 9 and 10, and for I had a good friend last week did 40 hours of cycling, 40. So this is at the absolute upper end. But for health and longevity, where does it reach its peak before it probably plateaus and goes backwards? Now, for most people, there's probably 5 hours of cardio. There's probably 4 to 5 hours in the weights room. Then what do you do the rest of the time? Well, this is where you need to take a stock take and say, well, where am I deficient? Is it in mobility? Is it in active recovery? And then we use the different modes. We've got training, we've got exercising, and then we've got active recovery or physical activity. First steps are is maximize the training that they can do so they can positively absorb it and make progress. That's usually a lot lower than most people think. But then we fill that in with activity. So that might be walking or gentle swimming, but it's under the radar. It would be zone one, and recovery from that is no issue. But the goal of me as the coach is to progressively increase their frequency, the duration, and then the intensity, always in that order, to make sure a client can get fitter and absorb more training. So if you want to train more, that's okay, as long as you're adapting to it. So we look at resting heart rate variability, and strength indices along with psychological profiles, because if they're going down, you're not going to absorb more training. But the goal is to have people, if you want to do more, we can make you do more, but it has to be done very progressively.
Yeah, I love the component of the psychological recovery as well, because I think often people underestimate that so much. They think, oh, I did similar training a year ago, and this year I can't handle it. But they're not realizing they're going through a divorce, or they have a high
Absolutely.
stress load at work or whatever, and they don't put any active work into de-stressing from that. And
Absolutely.
that often plays into the training as well, I believe. So that's a tough one.
Yeah. I agree. And I think a good coach takes into account everything, going through a divorce. How is work? How are your kids? So I'm not just going to give you a hardest workout that you could do. Any person can do that. It's, well, what do you need that will benefit you right now? And that's where we need to be very flexible in our approach. And I think good coaches are good listeners to and read between the lines and see that you're not recovering well between sets. So let's add more yoga. Let's add more mobility. Let's work with what you're giving me today. And I think that's a sign of a good coach, is that they can see what isn't spoken and also use your ears and eyes as well.
Yeah, very, very well said. I would love to hear, to kind of round this off, what's something that excites you in the current space of exercise science or strength or conditioning, or just in general, where this direction is going towards?
I love learning from other coaches who've been around a period of time. It's an Olympic year, so I really enjoy speaking to colleagues who train. One of my good friends does a lot of the swimming, so I love to see how they approach an Olympic cycle. I'm very into cycling, and the Tour de France is on, so I love to know how they train. And then I'm trying to take these ideas, which are for elite performers, and then apply them to the general public. So what really excites me every day is learning new stuff. And that's why I start my day every day with reading before I do anything else. And the whole point of doing all of that is so I can serve my clients and students better by learning more each day. So that excites me. But there's so much exciting work going on in the muscle, nutrition, strength world that it's barely possible to stay on top of it. But whether it's just muscle centric or nutrition or strength or just health and sleep, and there's just so much great stuff. So I really love learning and then applying that to my clients.
Yeah, never stopping the desire to learn. That's such a great trait to have. I actually just saw that there is a new documentary on Netflix at the moment about a sprint, because in terms of the preparation for the Olympics. So I'm like excited about the athletics portion as well for the Olympics. But I couldn't agree more. I think also in general for Gen Pop. Strength training or just the topic of training, it feels like, anyway, to me, it's never been this popular or just well known that everybody can go into the weights room, including women, especially women also throughout perimenopause, menopause, and Dr. Stacey Sims over, I think she's in New Zealand as well. I'm not entirely sure. She does some great work just promoting, like, yes, women need to lift heavy, and women, especially also post-menopause, need to lift heavy, and that's just such an exciting message for me.
I couldn't agree more. When I first started in the industry in the 90s, the females would be 10% of my business. It would be so small, and the pushback would be, I don't want to get big, I don't want to get bulky, everyone was runners. And then they would get injured because they would be under eaters and the bones and tendons wouldn't recover. And then I would rehab them with weight training and they would be so resistant to, they would rather tape up their knees and hobble down the road than go to the gym and do some leg press with one leg. But then a book came out by Marion, not Marion Nestle, the name escapes me, but it was Strong Women, Strong Bones. And then that got women like, oh, wow, weight training can build bone density. So then they got into it. But then within a few years, that was all forgotten, that fad went. And then it took, I'm going to say 2010 or so before females realized, hey, I can actually just train my glutes and I can train my shoulders and I can change how I look. And this has been one of the best things. It's a double-edged sword because now we're seeing major imbalances when you just focus on one area and do nothing else. Yeah, you might be happy for a year, but you just need to speak to women who've done that for a few years. And when they have such bad backs, they realize you need more balance. But, let's not go down that road. The fact is that now it's embraced by so many women that really warms this old strength coach's heart.
Yeah, I'm excited for what's to come. So yeah, Tony, thank you so much for your time. This has been a pleasure speaking with you, picking your brain. I will obviously put the link to your website and to the show notes to your course as well, because I think it's amazing. Anyone thinking about becoming a personal trainer or just even adding to their knowledge, please go and check it out. And also Tony's Instagram, where he puts out some great explanatory videos in terms of exercise demos, etc. So yeah, truly, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Tony Buttagee. Thank you so much for tuning in. Also, I just wanted to mention I'm new on LinkedIn, so if you're also on this platform, let's connect. And one more thing before you go, if you're looking for premium supplements, our partner at Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more. Feel free to use our code NCL at checkout. Thank you so much for listening, and don't forget, life is too short to be in a body you don't feel good in.